Enters. John Moore. What did they ask Jesus?
Do you not care that we're perishing?
Jennifer, if you're willing, what did Jesus ask them? Okay.
Why are you afraid? Have you no faith?
Jennifer or John, what did they ask each other?
Who is this then that even the wind and the sea obey?
Okay, John Bosworth, what had the demon done to the man? Summarize.
Turned him wild.
Yeah. What did the demon call Jesus, John Bosworth?
Son of the Most High God.
Gary, what did the demon ask Jesus? And I have four answers written down here.
What have I to do with you? Do not torment me. Do not send us out of the country. Send us into the storm.
And what did the herdsman do? Jacob.
Reported in the town what happened.
Yeah, what did the people ask Jesus to do, Jacob?
Leave.
And you ready? Okay, what did the healed man ask Jesus?
Go with Jesus.
And what did the healed man do? Yeah.
He proclaimed him to all the region of Decapolis.
Okay, back to John Moore. What had the physicians done to the for the woman?
Nothing. They made her suffer.
Yeah. And why did the woman confess, John Moore?
Because of fear and strong faith.
Okay, and what made the woman well, John Bosworth?
Well, Jesus did, right? Her faith.
What did the people ask Jairus about Jesus, John, again?
Why trouble him any further?
Gary, what did Jesus instruct Jairus to do?
Do not be afraid, only believe.
It's funny, I think I misspelled his name. At least once. Yeah, it's Jairus, not Jairus.
The second part of question 8.
Second part of question 8? How did the crowds react after to...
How did the crowds react to...
don't worry about prepositions. after he raised her.
Well, the crowds left in the storm, but the family was overcome with great amazement.
After.
After.
Yeah.
Amazed. They were amazed.
I wasn't paying attention to something here, huh?
Matthew was amazed and was instructed not to tell the crowd.
Right. They were instructed not to tell the crowd, but the crowd was scorning him.
Interesting. Okay. And what did Jesus instruct the people? Go ahead, Gary, troublemaker. Yeah. All right. Okay. So here we are in Matthew chapter 4. All right. He has just gotten done with the parables. You can read previously in Matthew chapter 4. We're up to verse 35. On that day, when evening came, Mark 4, verse 35. On that day, when evening came, he said to them, "Let us go over to the other side." He's going to go back and forth like a ping pong ball across this lake in this area. Leaving the crowd, they took him along with them in the boat, just as he was, and other boats were with him. There arose a fierce gale of wind, and the waves were breaking over the boat so much that the boat was already filling up. Jesus himself was in the stern, asleep on the cushion, and they woke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" And he got up and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Hush, be still." Some interpret this as "be muzzled." Stop what you're doing. And the wind died down, and it became perfectly calm. So he has power over nature. Frankly, this has got to be one of the most impressive displays of his power. Yes, raising somebody from the dead is impressive. I wouldn't take that away from anybody. This is also impressive. Can you imagine the entire countryside? Instantaneously, the weather changes. This word, by the way, when he says, "Hush, be still," he rebuked the wind, said, "Hush, be still," and the wind died down. The tense in there that doesn't come through in our English version implies that when he spoke these words, it was already calm. If you will, like the sound barrier. Once something goes past the sound barrier, breaks the sound barrier, you see it before you hear it. That's kind of what's going on here. He's, as he's speaking, it is calm. So again, just showing his power. Now, the Old Testament talks about who has power. To us, we know who has power. We know that Jesus created the world. The Son created the world. But they're not quite getting that yet. In fact, I think this is about that. Psalm 135 says, He causes the vapors to ascend from the ends of the earth. Who makes the lightnings for the rain? And who brings forth the wind from His treasuries? So when He does this, He's making a statement. I'm not just an ordinary prophet here. I am God's Son. It doesn't escape them. He asked them, he got up rebuked, verse 40, he asked them, he said to them, why are you afraid? And then he answers his own question, do you still have no faith? They became very much afraid and said to one another, who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him? Matthew's account says, they asked, what kind of man? Not only who is this, but what kind of a man? And they're getting the point. Oh, God is the one that controls the oceans. A couple points from this. In my version, and in most, in fact, I've never read one that doesn't, maybe you have. The question they ask him, they said to him, teacher, do you not care that we are perishing? This sounds like they're saying, don't you even care? Do you know how we ask questions in ways which we are conveying, we expect a certain response? Often a rhetorical question we do it with. We ask a rhetorical question, and you know what the answer is. The way this is formed, they know what the answer is, okay? They know he cares. They're saying to him, we know you care. Okay, now, at the same time, he asks them, where is your faith? So what we have here is they have enough faith to know to go to him, but they don't have enough faith to know not to be scared. That's what's going on here. Not to be scared. Now, as a quick side note, even if the boat smashed to pieces on the shore, God, or not on the shore, God could save them. We have a demonstration of this, a boat smashing to pieces and all 200 plus people being saved. What am I talking about? Okay. Now, say that they were all swallowed by a great big fish. Would that be a problem for God? No. Okay, so, no, I'm not saying that I'd do any better than them. I doubt I would, obviously. But they're forgetting these things. And here is God's prophet, as far as they're concerned, in the boat. So, what we have here is a story of the disciples going, it's an increase in their, it's a step in their progression of their knowledge, okay? I know he can do something. And then, wham, the next thing you know, they're saying, what kind of a man is this? So we have a progression in their faith. A couple applications from this. First of all, protecting his disciples is so easy for Jesus, he can do it in his sleep. Coming to Jesus despite not fully understanding him. That's what they were doing. Doesn't that fit us all? Who after they have died, completely understands Jesus? Nobody. We all come to Jesus on different levels, but none of us completely know him. Be patient with others. That's what Jesus was. He didn't jump up and down and say, you, whatever he would have said. At the same time, don't lollygag. Yeah, they didn't understand him, but do you notice he rebukes them? Where is your faith? He's saying, look, guys, you should have gotten this far already, but you haven't done it. Comments or questions on what we've seen so far?
You kind of start off saying that when somebody raises somebody from the dead, that's an amazing thing.
Yeah.
And it is. No, there's no question about that. I think there's kind of always that inkling of, well, were they really dead? And that's kind of always one of the attacks that are made against Jesus for these things. Well, was Lazarus really dead? Or, you know, all this other stuff. It's this calming of the storm. You know, this instantaneous, the wind stops and it's like glass out there. That's the kind of thing that prepares them to understand. He not only has that power, he has this power too. And
yeah.
It's not a matter of, she wasn't really dead.
Right.
She was dead.
Yeah,
Lazarus was dead. These others were dead. They were dead.
Yeah. And it's not a localized, right, occasional.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, this to me is one of the most amazing things. I couldn't imagine the entire. I mean, he's on a sea. Okay. Now, it's not as big as the Ontario, but it's big. And all of a sudden, the sea, and it's not like just the storm was all around. Even if it were all around, that would maybe increase it. But the whole geographic area changed almost, or if not, instantaneously. Unbelievable. I just couldn't imagine that. If I were 10 miles away and saw that, I would think,
whoa,
that was odd. You know, we always say, it doesn't matter what part of the country or world you're from, you always say, if the weather is snowing in the morning and you're turning on the heat in the afternoon, then you must be from wherever. The person would probably say something like that. Wow. But if you're right with Jesus, then not only are you saying wow, you're realizing who and what had done it. Any other comment? Yes, ma'am. Yeah, they're in their own little me world, which you don't blame them. I would be too. I would be scared to death. And suddenly they were suddenly transported out of their little me world into a completely different one. Anybody know what the problem of pain is? I summarize it. There are books written about the problem of pain. What am I talking about? Problem of evil, problem of pain, equivocated.
God's all powerful. Why do you people suffer?
Yeah. How does this passage right here relate to that?
God allows it. God allows it. He can. He does have the ability to override it, if you will. But if you choose, but if it's not happening, then he's choosing not to.
Okay. Excellent. Now, yes.
He allows it to happen, but he gives us a choice of coming to him to help with that problem.
Okay. Okay. Anyone else? Yes.
Well, I mean, these guys were in anguish.
Yeah.
And no doubt about it, in fear of their lives, and he used that fear to make them believe.
Right. To I'll rephrase. You said to make them believe. Perfect. I'm going to say increase their faith. Test their faith. Okay. Exactly what's going on here. Notice, they believe. What's going on is they come to him and they say to him, "We know that you love us." But at the same time, your actions are inconsistent with what we think. That's the problem. They think one thing, but they see his actions are inconsistent with that, so they're questioning what's going on. This is exactly what goes on with those people who say, there's evil, there's pain, there's catastrophe, there must be no God. Because if there were a God, we have this expectation of him, he's not meeting that expectation, so there's no God. They don't say there's no God. But it is the same in principle, the same idea. There are two things to note from this. Why did they say what they said? Because they had little faith. So when somebody says that, to state the obvious, they have little faith, if any faith at all. Number one. Number two, as John and Gary have said explicitly, first of all, is why do they say that? Because they have little faith. Now, why is this whole situation going on? In this case, I think specifically to increase their faith. No matter what, it is always generally to increase their faith, if not specifically. So when we hear of a tsunami killing 250,000 people, there are many reasons why, many specific reasons why that God allowed that, God did it, I don't know. But throughout them all, it is always a case of testing our faith. We can always increase our faith. For somebody who says, oh, God's an evil God for letting that happen, for letting hurt and pain and suffering happen, that is to misunderstand. There's a hierarchy in God's concerns. The first in the hierarchy is our faith. May it ever be increasing. Our faith be increasing. And then below that, definitely there, is our comfort. He does want us to live a comfortable life, but that's not first. First is our faith. So when somebody says, oh, God's an evil God to allow all this pain to happen, they don't understand the hierarchy of God's concerns. The first concern is our faith. Comments or questions on what we've talked about here? Yeah, especially in your... Yeah, getting them to agree with it. that takes a little... It's easy to put it out in a PowerPoint. Just send out the PowerPoint.
Rich do not go to God because they are happy with what they have. The poor do because they have difficulties.
Right.
It's a test.
What do we? And then, of course, if God stepped in and stopped every little thing, then they'd accuse him of not allowing them to have free will. You know. Okay. Good points. Thank you for your comments. We go on to Mark chapter 5. They came to the other side of the sea, into the country of the Gerasenes, which is around Galilee. When he got out of the boat, immediately a man from the tombs with an unclean spirit met him. Matthew and Luke's account have two men. Excuse me, Luke's account has two men. Let's try this one more time. Matthew's account has two men. Luke and Mark have one man. So it seems that Mark is just emphasizing the one person. Okay, there's no contradiction. Neither of them say there were, Mark does not say there was only one man. Okay, if there was, he said there was only one man and Luke said there were two, then we'd have a problem. But if you have one, if you have two, then you have one. Okay, so here comes a man from the tombs with an unclean spirit and meets him. He had his dwelling among the tombs, and no one was able to bind him any more, even with a chain, because he had often been bound with shackles and chains, and the chains had been torn apart by him, and the shackles broken in pieces, and no one was strong enough to subdue him. So this unclean spirit was allowing this body to have supernatural strength of some kind. Okay. Luke's account said that this man had no clothing, or he had not put on any clothing for a long time, or he takes off the clothing that he puts on. And Matthew's account says that he was so extremely violent that nobody could pass by. So here comes Jesus and his entourage walking down the trail, and here comes this man who is a lunatic and barely clothed and violent. Verse 5. Constantly, night and day, he was screaming among the tombs and in the mountains and gashing himself with stones. Seeing Jesus from a distance, he ran up and bowed down before him and shouting with a loud voice, he said, "What business do we have with each other, Jesus, Son of the God, Most High God? I implore you, do not torment me." For he had been saying to him, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." And he was asking him, "What is your name?" And he said to him, "My name is Legion, for we are many." Luke's account says that many demons had entered him. A Roman legion comprised 6,000. Were there actually 6,000? I don't know. I don't think we can take it that far. Literally is what I'm saying. There might have been more than 6,000. There are 2,000 pigs that go and die. I don't know how many there were, but it's emphasizing there were many of them. Now, I want us to stop and understand something. When we think of Jesus, Satan and the work that he does, we very easily overlook what he's trying to do to us. because we think it's such a subtle thing, and our, it appeals to our flesh, whatever it is. Oh, we want this thing. But listen to this explanation again. Remember, Satan is the cause of what is happening to this man. Constantly, night and day, he was screaming among the tombs and in the mountains, gashing himself with stones. Who wants that? Nobody. But do you understand? This is what Satan is trying. If he could, he would do this to every single one of us. And he does, although differently. He does it. You ever hear of a broken home? How sad. You ever hear of child abuse? Here it is. It's the same thing. It's different in manifestation, but he's wanting somebody to scream and to gash themselves. That's what Satan does to us. And it doesn't matter if it's a broken home. It can be that extreme. You look around. You ever hear of PTSD? Same thing. It's horrible, horrible, horrible. There's chaos in the world. It's sin. Satan is behind it, and then it produces these people, these different situations in which people are grieving. God doesn't want that. Why does that happen? Because that's what Satan is doing. Now, we just drew a whole bunch of pictures of these extreme cases where you look at this family, you see it falling apart, and you think, God, no! But you know, if you tell a little lie, you know what's going to happen? You might not be feeling the God no right now, but you will later on. And Satan, he'll be having a field day. Although at that time, he'll be thinking God no himself. But it will happen. So remember, if you want to calibrate what you think Satan is trying to do, turn to this passage and read it. Because this is what he wants of each of us. Okay, going on. By the way, I think the reason why Jesus asks him his name, there's a leading up to it. Jesus is saying, get out. It's not getting out. And then Jesus says, what's your name? And he says, we are many. Now, that's what's going on in the narrative. Why? I think the purpose of it is Jesus is demonstrating not only does he have power over one spirit, but he has power over, you just bring them on. Keep them coming. Keep them coming. I can take on as many as you bring. I think that's the point of it. Like he has power not only over just, making a tree die, but the entire geographic area calm. So here, verse 10, he began to implore him earnestly not to send him out of the country, them out of the country. Now there was a large herd of swine feeding nearby in a mountain. The demons implored him, saying, send us into the swine that we may enter them. And Jesus gave them permission. In Matthew's account, he says, go. So it's not permission in Matthew's account, it's imperative, it's a command. You go. And coming out, the unclean spirits entered the swine, and the herd rushed down the steep bank into the sea, about 2,000 of them, and they were drowned in the sea. Their herdsmen ran away and reported it to the city and the country, and the people, one account says the whole city, came to see what it is that had happened. They came to Jesus and observed the man who had been demon-possessed sitting down, clothed and in his right mind, the very man who had had the legion, and they became frightened. Those who had seen it described to them how it had happened to the demon-possessed man and all about all the swine. And they began to implore him to leave their region. Do you remember Jesus when he calls Peter? Peter's out in a boat. They're fishing. They don't get anything. And Jesus says, lower your net. And they get so much fish that they call everybody over. Peter realizes, hey, this man is a servant of God. Peter doesn't quite understand it all yet. But he says, this man is a servant of God. What does he say to him? Do you remember? Go away from me, for I am a sinner. You've got people here. God performs this miracle. They say, go away, for I am a sinner. No. So you have two, you have the same reaction, but for two different purposes. My point isn't purpose matters, although that does matter. But the point is, heart matters, right? You've got two different people, the same thing, relatively miracle. They say this man come and do a miracle, and one of them says, go away from me, I don't want to see your face again. And the other one says, go away from me because I'm a sinner, and ends up dying for this man later on. It's not a question of evidence. It never is. The question always is the heart. Well, verse 18, as he was getting into the boat, the demon who had been demon-possessed was imploring him. The man who had been demon-possessed was imploring him that he might accompany him. And he did not let him, but he said, "Go home to your people, report to them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he had mercy on you." And he went away and began to proclaim in the Decapolis what great things Jesus had done for him, and everyone was amazed. Comments or questions? Probably comments. It's pretty self-explanatory.
Were these Gentiles, the people who must have been with the swine?
Well, you would think. Okay, first of all, yes, probably. The Decapolis is a Gentile region, okay? However, when Jesus heals a Gentile, normally it says it, and here comes a Gentile, or a centurion or something like that indicates that he's a Gentile. Here it doesn't. I'm not trying to make a big deal out of that at all. I think it probably was a Gentile. However, if it were a Jew, and they had pigs, then no surprise, just to be consistent, when the Messiah comes, they say, "Get away from me. We've already rejected your old law. We don't want your new law." I couldn't push either way. I would hover around it's a Gentile that they save.
It's strange how people have to take so long to understand who Jesus is. And two times we've already seen when he has gotten rid of the Spirit, they confessed who he was.
Oh, yeah.
He's the Son of God, Jesus, the Son of the Most High.
Yeah.
People don't understand. Get that.
Well, they did have special access. They are in the spirit world. So they although you're right.
They said this out loud.
Yep. I don't want to be too harsh on them because I'd be right there.
Yeah.
I'd be,
You wouldn't believe what they would say, animals.
Right. Yeah, here's a demon.
When he says to the fellow, "Go home and see how Jesus had compassion," these guys are thinking, who is this guy? We're scared to death of it. He wants this guy to go home. Two people tell him, Jesus loved me. He loves you. The compassion he has, he loves us all. He wants us to come to him. Because when he goes back to this region later, they come to him and want him to stay.
Yeah.
So the effect that, him telling the compassion Jesus had on him to the people was great.
Encountering their superstitious.
Right.
He's explaining. Here's what happened, guys. Yeah, excellent point. Three beggars. First of all, the demons. The word implore is used of the demons. The demons come up to him and implore him twice. The people, they come out from the city, they see what's happened, and they implore him to leave. And then the man who's been healed comes up and implores him to stay. He wants to stay with him. They knew who he was and what was going to come. Other passages, Matthew says, "Have you come to torment us before the time?" There was no doubt in their mind what reality is. They know what's going to happen. They're just biding their time. "Have you come to torment us before the time?" So they knew what was going to, who he was and what was going to happen. And in the meantime, they are living in torment and fear until that day. But there was nothing they could do about it. Once they had fallen, once they had sinned, broken their law, I don't even know how that happens, but there's a law up there. God condemned them, 2 Peter, Jude, he condemns them to pits of hell eternally, and they can never get out of it. Let me make a point here. Hebrews chapter 4. Hebrews chapter 2, I'm sorry. The book of Hebrews, the beginning of it is, Jesus is greater than angels. One of the evidences of this is in verse 16. "Assuredly, he does not give help to angels, but he gives help to the descendants of Abraham." Angels, what angel would need help but one that was fallen, had sinned, an unclean spirit? Same thing, if I may be loose in this interpretation. My point is that, we have privilege. Jesus came, the angels, no second chances. Man, second chances. Thank God. You want to make a point?
I forgot to make it earlier when when the demons in the ESV in verse 7 it says, "I adjure you by God, do not torment me." So they're even trying to make him to make an oath that he wouldn't torment them. It just by God. I mean, it means that that is amazing to me that they would say that.
The arrogance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good point. Also, our responsibility. The demons, they knew who he was and what was going to come, but there was nothing they could do about it. This emphasizes our privilege. We can do something. We've messed up. We can do something about it. Also, our privilege. James 2:19. You believe that God is one. You do well. The demons also believe and shudder, is my version. Tremble. We see that. Are you coming to torment us before the time? Please don't do it. That's what they're saying. This is what this is talking about. They can't do anything about it. On the other hand, verse 20, are you willing to recognize, you foolish fellow, that faith without works is useless? The businessmen, they didn't know who he was, and they didn't care what was going to come. They just ran out of there with their tails between their legs or whatever happened. I don't even know what happened, but they didn't stick around to find out what was going to happen. Do you notice that they were afraid? Another account says, when they came out, they saw the man who had been healed sitting at his feet. Here's Jesus, and here's the guy sitting right at his feet. They know, they understand what's happened. They get scared. That's what we saw. They get scared, and they said, please go away. Again, in 4:41, when the disciples, they see the Son of God clear the locality of storm, what happened to them? Number one, they were scared. Number two, they said, what kind of a man is this? So you have the same reaction. They see this miracle. They both get scared. And again, one says go away. The other says stay. Again, the question isn't evidence. It's of the heart. Which am I? Really is what it comes down to. And yes, Lee Tosti has accepted the plan of salvation. But what hasn't Lee accepted? You better find out and be honest about it. And change himself. The healed man, when he learned who Jesus was, he did all that he could for him. I want to come with you. No, go away. So what did he do? He went away and he preached everywhere that he went, and Jesus became well known there. The healed man was truly dedicated, and the healed man was truly humble. Some actors, well-known actors, will not take the second role in a movie. Oh no, if they're not number one, they won't take it. This guy, he wanted to go with Jesus. He wanted to be numbered among the disciples that follow him. Jesus says, no, you don't. You go away. You've got to spend time away from me. And the disciples said, okay, I'll do it. Whatever you need me to do, that's what I'll do. That should be our attitude. Comments or questions? We'll talk about this quickly. We'll just kind of run through it real quick. About demon possession. It's not a question of whether demons exist today, nor whether demons have influence today. 1 Timothy chapter 4. Turn to this one passage. 1 Timothy 4:1. The Spirit explicitly says, in later times, some will fall away from the faith, paying attention to the deceitful spirits and doctrines of demons. They're there. They're active. There's no doubt about that. How do they work? How do you pay attention to a deceitful spirit, a doctrine of a demon? By means of the hypocrisy of liars, men. It'll go on. So it's not that the demon comes in and specifically implants in your mind directly some evil thought. It's always indirect means. The question isn't whether or not they exist. The question is whether Christ allows them to possess us today. Who was in control the whole time? Jesus. They're coming up to him and saying, whatever you've got the last word. We want this, we want this, we want this, but you, Jesus, have the last word. The question isn't whether or not demons exist today. The question is, does Jesus allow them to possess us? I would say the answer is no. We can argue that. But let's pretend for a minute that somebody comes up and says, I am possessed by a demon. My friend is possessed by a demon. My enemy is possessed by a demon. All three of those scenarios happen. How do you answer that? First of all, are you going to convince them? Are you going to convince them in the 45 minutes that you have, if it lasts that long, that they probably are not possessed by a demon? No. Is that a problem? No. Not initially, at least. Let's see. I think Gary was first.
The first thing I would do is to ask them, you know, what proof you have.
Yeah.
Let's lay the cards out on the table. And, you know, then you got to turn to the Bible. You know, I mean, if they're not a believer in the Bible, they've got a long ways to go.
Yeah.
But if they are, then you've got to show whether the demons had power over Jesus or not.
Okay.
And they did not.
Okay. And so?
So if you are in Christ, that demon has no power over you.
Right. Romans 8. Remember this passage. Romans 8, verse 37. Paul deals with this right here. This is the passage. Somebody comes to you and says, I'm possessed by a demon. Turn right here. Boom. Although, I'm not... Gary said he would first ask for proof. I'm going to skip over that just for a minute. I would too. But I generally don't hover around that too long because it ain't going to work to convince them. That's my experience. In all things, we overwhelmingly conquer through Him who loved us. I am convinced that neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor things present, nor things to come, nor powers, nor height, nor depth, nor any created thing will be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus. You've got demon possession? What's the answer? To get the demon out of the person? To get the person into Christ. That is the answer. Again. Sorry?
Because Christ will purge the person.
Okay. Yes. And I am allowing that the person is actually demon possessed, right, which I don't think can happen. Okay? But let's, for the sake of conversation, say yes, the person's demon possessed. There is no exorcism. In fact, you can trace the whole New Testament, and the only thing that they were told is to say, go away. Pray. And tell it to go away. We don't have that anymore, but we don't exercise. We don't have the command to exercise. What we have is the command not to get the demon out of the person, but to get the person into Christ. By the way, even if they did have a demon, does that excuse any of their behavior? 1 Corinthians 10:13, God will not allow you to be tempted beyond that which you are able to withstand. Demon or no? Again, I don't think there are demons that possess people today. We have the power by the grace of God. If you resist the devil, he will flee from you. I've got a demon. Well, tell it to go away. And Romans 8 with Galatians 3. How do you get into Christ? Romans 6, Galatians 3. You know, that is an appealing... People who think like this like to talk in terms of wrapping yourself in the warmth of Jesus. What is Galatians 3 talking about? Clothing yourself. Putting on Jesus as clothing. That kind of terminology appeals to these people. Now, whether or not they'll actually see it and accept it, and then later on accept that there are no demons, at least as far as Lee knows, there aren't any that possess, is what I'm saying. Okay. We're going to stop there. Comments? Questions? Yeah, I don't think we have time to get through this next part. Oh, no, definitely not. Actually, I don't have much to say on it, but I don't want to go over it. Thank you for your work and your thoughts. We look forward to next week's class.